Now, the group of seven nations have a plan to change the way corporations are taxed. The deal would implement a 15% minimum tax rate for multinational corporations, and technology companies like Amazon and Google would be taxed wherever they make a profit, regardless of where their headquarters are. There have been accusations that the plan's unrealistic. Getting the seven nations to agree, let alone bringing other countries on board, will be challenging, and the U.S. might be a big hurdle, with top Republicans in Congress saying they're not on board. We're talking about G7's proposed tax reforms for global corporations, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think large global companies like Google and Facebook should pay taxes everywhere they make a profit, or only places where they're headquartered? Do you want to see companies work together to keep countries work together to keep companies from crossing borders to pay less in taxes? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Steven Rosenthal is a senior fellow at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. Steve, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Can you outline this proposal? I won't call it a deal because it's not really a deal yet. Can you outline this proposal for us and what it changes?
Well, the group of seven tentatively agreed that there should be a minimum global tax rate so that wherever companies operated and profited, there should at least be a 15% minimum tax. And this is an agreement by the group of seven to go down this road to apply a minimum corporate tax of 15%. They still have some formalities, each of these seven countries, to formalize the agreement. And then more generally, they need to persuade a whole bunch of other countries, the G20 next month, and then a wider group of countries to participate. And this is important because the U.S. Recently reduced its tax rate, corporate tax rate, from 35 to 21, and lowered its tax rate for offshore profits to 10.5%. And that rate, 21% for domestic profits and 10.5% for foreign profits, was designed to generate more activity in the U.S. And in fact, we help participate in the race to the bottom to try to lower our corporate tax rates below those of some of our competitors in order to attract more business. And that race to the bottom has been going on for a couple of decades. We were a little behind in the race prior to our tax reform efforts in 2017, but now we've jumped to the lead. But Biden wants to increase corporate taxes to go back from 21 up to 28, halfway to where they were, 35, and then to increase the 10.5% rate for foreign profits to 21%. But if we increase our corporate tax rates at home, we risk losing some of our companies abroad and losing some business that we hope to attract from foreign countries here in the U.S. And the minimum tax creates a floor to reduce that pernicious competition, that race to the bottom.
How big a thing is it for companies to move their operations or some symbolic part of their operations to another country to pay a lower tax rate? I'm thinking we hear a lot about Ireland, for example, and so-called inversions. Is this a thing that's happening a lot?
Well, it's happened a lot more in recent years than ever before. If you go back a couple of decades, like to the 70s, the five largest U.S. companies, they made stuff. Computers, IBM, cars, GM, you know, Eastman Kodak made photography equipment and the like. They had factories in the U.S. and production here, a physical presence here. And so even when they sold abroad, it was pretty clear that their profits really originated in the U.S., and they really couldn't move when we raised their tax rates or kept them high. But in recent years, our economies really shifted. We have a lot of digital companies and companies that have a lot of intangible assets and intellectual property. So the largest companies of today include Apple and Microsoft and Google and Amazon and Facebook. And so those operations are more easy to move. It doesn't take shifting a large factory. It just changes the location of some paperwork where intellectual property is owned, say, perhaps by an affiliate, and you write some internal contract. And so going back a few decades, this wasn't much of a problem of us worrying about competing with other countries because our companies really couldn't leave that easily. But in recent years, they have been leaving. And Obama put in place a variety of regulations to make it more prohibitive for U.S. companies to leave. Those were mainly stopgap types of efforts. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, that tax reform measure, took a different approach. Rather than sticks, it offered a lot of carrots. It just slashed U.S. corporate tax rates and competed very effectively in the race to the bottom. But that has its drawbacks. So yes, to answer your question, in today's economy, when so much is intellectual property and the globe is so much smaller now, supply chains, even for physical products, span the world. Clothing, for instance, can be manufactured in one jurisdiction and sold in another, and the fabric and the cotton can be grown yet somewhere else. And so we have an integrated planet, and operations are pretty seamless these days. And firm mobility is much greater now as a practical matter. And so the question is, can the tax laws compete and not be circumvented?
Talking to Steve Rosenthal from the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center about a new proposal agreed by the United States and six big economic partners to set minimum corporate tax standards. Now they've got to sell it, well, back at home, for one thing, here in the U.S., and to a bunch of other countries, too. You can join in if you have questions or thoughts on this at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Steve, you said the race to the bottom, the idea of we're going to lower our corporate taxes to be more competitive for these businesses. You said it has drawbacks. Could you spell those out for us?
Well, it's hard to get anyone to agree to a large coordinated enterprise. It takes a lot of effort. And that G7 agreement was remarkable that we at least got seven countries to signal their intent of continuing down this path and selecting a minimum tax rate. But there are a lot of countries in the world, and we can't expect all of them to join the agreement. Although there are measures to punish any of the countries that try to attract business by undercutting, say, that 15% rate. And so coordinating internationally is a big challenge. And of course, our last president, Trump, did not believe in multilateralism, did not believe in coordinating. But Biden takes a different view. Biden believes in coordination globally, at least in some instances. And here is an example in which by setting a floor, 15% tax rate in foreign countries, and their taxes on their multinationals, we in effect free ourselves, give us more maneuverability to raise our tax rates. If we go from 15 to the full 28 that Biden has suggested, or even with preserving the 21% on the foreign piece of this, those are still numbers larger than 15%. However, the U.S. offers a lot of attractions to be here, the infrastructure, the educated workforce, the legal protections. And so we won't, so our efforts to attract business will not be undercut as dramatically when the floor is 15 as opposed to a floor of zero. And look, that's very important in my mind because we've lost a lot of revenue over the last few years in this race to the bottom. Corporate tax receipts pay very little, contribute very little to the infrastructure we have, to the educated workforce, to all the benefits that the corporations enjoy from operating here. And I think we ought to charge them more. And without a floor on foreign taxation and the race to the bottom to get to zero, being present, we really are constrained in how much we can raise our tax rates. And we need those corporate taxes to fund the programs that all of us demand.
We continue our talk about the G7 tax proposal to set a floor, a minimum corporate tax level for everywhere, if possible. Steve Rosenthal is with us, senior fellow at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. Still time for you to join in with your thoughts on this idea, your questions at 800-642-1234. Do you worry that companies, in effect, evade taxes by moving from one country to another, whether it's actually moving operations or moving sort of a nominal headquarters? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Steve, I want to talk about some key players, some at the table on this, some not. First of all, China, really big economy, not part of the G7. What are the thoughts on whether they would be excited about an idea like this?
Well, I think the Chinese are a puzzle. I don't think they've signaled much. I think the Chinese like to preserve as many tools for their economy as they can. But the question still is there whether or not they would want to cooperate. That's hard to say. And they're a very sizable country, commercial presence. You know, of course, I'm not sure China's a great substitute for the U.S. I think if I had a whole bunch of intangibles, I'd be a little more confident that the U.S. would protect them and the legal system here would guarantee that I could keep them versus, say, a completely different system like the Chinese. And so, again, they're a large presence, and it's unclear.
Another possible stumbling block closer to home. Republicans in Congress say they don't like this idea. They say it gives foreign countries influence on U.S. tax policy. They're worried about if we're still in the 20s and this floor is the 15s, that still doesn't sound that competitive. Can you talk about the politics in Congress over this?
Well, that's a real good question. I think that Republicans are framing this tentative agreement as a concession to allow foreign countries, in effect, to set our rates. But, of course, the foreign countries were already setting our rates by racing to the bottom and adopting, at least some of them, a beggar thy neighbor strategy. So I don't really give a lot of weight to the argument that we're somehow ceding a tax authority. That's sort of formalistic. The other argument that, well, 15% as a minimum tax is too low for, you know, corporate tax rates that will either be 28 or 21 if Biden's measures are enacted. Well, 15 is better than zero, so I'm not sure why we would stop at zero just because we could yet have trouble getting to the full 21% or 28%. That doesn't strike me as particularly plausible. But I think fundamentally the Republicans' concern is the flip side of the argument that I made. You know, in my mind, setting a floor on corporate taxes affords the U.S. Greater maneuverability and latitude to raise our own taxes and use those revenues to pay for needed social services. And likewise, it allows foreign countries like the French or the Germans to raise their rates and collect more from their corporations without fear of losing their corporations. But I think philosophically, the Republicans just object to corporate taxes. Regardless of how much we need the financial resources, it's been decades since the Republicans have actually voted for a bill that raised taxes, net taxes, and the direction that the Republicans have gone most recently have been slashing corporate tax rates, going from 35 to 21%. And so as a consequence, I just don't think they want to see the U.S. raise taxes. But again, in my judgment, we need that revenue. There are so many services that we need, infrastructure, social security, you know, for an aging population. We need a revenue base to support the services that we need in the future. And we can only borrow and spend so long, in my judgment. And that's really what the last Republican tax bill did. It cut taxes and shifted to the future, the financial needs, you know, paying for the financial needs that will arise. At some point, we're going to have to pay for those. and we have to have a revenue base.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Mike?
I just wanted to bring up, I just read recently somewhere there was like the top 12 wealthiest people in America make so much money that you have to take the next 14.3 million Americans to match their wealth. And yet out of all of that, the top 12 only paid around, I think, $3 billion in taxes, whereas the 14.3 million ended up paying $143 billion in taxes. So the wealth is just completely unequal and just off the charts. And then the taxes, like the middle class, the poor, are still, you know, holding this country up on their shoulders, while the wealthy are getting away with tax loopholes, with, you know, offshore accounts, with different things like that. The 2017 tax cuts, they slashed the taxes for the wealthy, for the corporations, and they gave this little tiny bit to the American middle class, which now is kind of being eaten away because as the tax law is written, over time, the middle class are actually going to end up paying more in taxes than they did before.
Mike, thanks for the call. Mike, getting into personal taxes, though some of the wealthiest people you mentioned own some of the corporations affected by the corporate tax policy we're talking about. But your thoughts, Steve, on Mike's belief that the taxes are out of balance, in effect.
Well, Mike is correct that the wealth inequities are dramatic in terms of how much the rich have. And then I think our tax rules largely compound the issue because the wealthy are different, say, than you and I. They own more capital, and we just tax their capital very lightly. Mike is probably referring to a report that just came out today by ProPublica mm-hmm. that somehow accessed tax information on the top several dozen Americans, individuals, all the richest Americans. And they could, you know, if you look to how they've done on the Fortune 50 list, their wealth is just growing in a staggering way each year, but they pay very few taxes. And that's largely because what they own are things like stock that appreciate, but until you sell them, you don't pay any taxes. And Warren Buffett is famous for not selling any of his Berkshire Hathaway stock, for instance. And so that's just one form of the way that capital is taxed very lightly. And one of the other problems, in my judgment, of our race to the bottom on corporate taxes is that the beneficiaries of corporate tax cuts in the short run are the shareholders. There's an argument that in the long run, some of the benefit will trickle down to workers. The long run could take 10 or 20 years. And we never really saw that when we cut the corporate taxes in 2017. We never saw benefits to the workers. What we see are benefits to the shareholders because after-tax profits rise and shareholder prices and share prices also rise. And if you look to who owns shares in our economy, the top 1% own more than half of the stock in our economy. And the bottom 50% own less than 1%. And so it's really skewed who owns stock and who benefits from cuts in corporate taxes. And again, I think I agree with Mike. Our tax rules have aggravated rather than mitigated some of the wealth inequality.
Mike, thanks for the call. Steve, in just our last minute or so, this is not a done deal by any means. Assuming things went well and it gets like, what kind of timeline are we talking about to where we could have some kind of floor like this, this 15% corporate tax for many countries around the world?
Well, the G7 is going to take this up with a broader group of countries, the G20 in July, and we'll see how that goes. I don't think that should stop Biden from continuing down the path of trying to increase U.S. corporate taxes. That is, if there's the specter of a larger minimum tax, then companies are not going to flee today if a minimum tax is going to be enacted, say, next year even. So the pace of that minimum tax really is not so critical. In my judgment, what is critical is for us to start increasing taxes to pay for the services that we all are going to expect and want to see funded in the future.
Steve, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Steve Rosenthal, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution Tax Policy Center. He joined us today for a look at a plan that would set a minimum corporate tax around the world proposed by the U.S. and six other leading economies.